Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Green Room Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Colin Mitchell. Colin, how are you feeling this morning? I know your alarm didn't go off or something.
It probably did. I probably in my sleep turned it off. But actually, so I can check right now if I made it, because I made the mistake before. Yeah, no, it went off. No, I made the mistake before putting PM instead of AM.
Yeah.
And then I like wake up at like 10 AM and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So, I have to put my phone out of reach to where I have to physically like lunge for it to grab it. I do that in naps too. Like I have to physically do that to like put it out of sight or else I do the same thing.
I do that for naps, but I sleep too deep for me to do it where I'll wake up. Otherwise, I'll just sleep through the alarm going off.
Yes.
So that's tough.
Interesting.
So yeah, my eyes definitely look a little swollen here.
Yeah, and you're wearing a blank white cap.
I was gonna wear this.
What is that?
Because check this out. I got it for the second place on that scramble tournament that I did.
They gave you a blank white cap.
Actually, it's not blank. Which side is it? This side?
Oh, Lord. Oh, I hate it. What is
I hate it too. I hate it too, but I thought it was funny, so I wore it.
Colin's wearing, for those listening, Colin's wearing a blank white cap, but it's not blank. On the side, it has,
yeah, it has a logo. It's like a logo something. I don't know what it is. Yeah. What else I got? I got a pullover, a polo, a window breaker in case, you know, I ever need that.
A window breaker or a windbreaker?
No, like a window breaker. Like if I'm in an accident, my door can't open, or like if I'm underwater.
Oh, one of those like.
Yeah. And then wow. I got a pen, a water bag. It's weird. The water bag is weird. It's like a water bottle, like the top of one, and then it's just like this sack.
Yeah, that's how water bags work. All right. Good. You have a nice survival kit. That's good to know. All right. Speaking of survival, let's talk about these transfers from North Texas. See, you like that? You like that, Colin?
I'm not sure how much I liked it. That was a mid segue at best.
You laughed. I got a laugh out of you, and I guarantee you somebody out there laughed. So
yeah, but not because it was good though.
We'll start with basketball, and then we'll go to football. I feel like it's logical, but also there's a lot more positives in basketball than there are in football because football hasn't added anybody yet. They will, but so far they haven't. So we'll talk about basketball first and the transfers in and the roster and all that stuff. Let me type it out so I can have it on the screen.
Okay.
All right. So North Texas has had four players over the span of like, they added Jonathan Massey first, which was like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Since then, they've added three more players. So they've added four players out of the transfer portal. To give everybody a recap of where we are, the returning players at this moment, Rondell Walker, Alex Cotton, Matthew Stone, Mulai Sissoko, Terrence Dixon, and then they add Tyron Mason, a freshman from, I think, Carrollton, if I'm not mistaken. So that's six. So the scholarship limit is 13 in college basketball. So you have seven spots to fill. We've already talked about the departures. Robert Allen's out of eligibility. Then Jason Edwards, CJ Nolan, Ruben Jones, John Buggs, and Aaron Scott are the five that transferred out. We can talk about them later. But as far as the additions go, and they got two additions yesterday. Like I said, Jonathan Massey from Longwood out of Houston, 6'6", senior wing, 11.3 points last year, five rebounds, 37% from the floor, 35% from three. Somebody who I didn't watch a lot of Longwood, but people that I know from Houston speak pretty highly of him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to who's next? Brock Weiss. Center transfer from Creighton, 6'10", only 1 year of college. So he spent that first year at Creighton. And I know I sent you a rundown that said sophomore, but it should just say redshirt freshman there because he didn't play last year for Creighton. So they got him originally, I believe, from Memphis, Tennessee. And then they added point guard Latrell Giselle out of SFA, 6'1", graduate senior. So he'll be going into his fifth year. 13 points per game, two assists, 40% from the field, 41% from the field, 37% from three. And then guard Jasper Floyd from Fairfield, 6'3", senior, 9.5 points per game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 38.5% from the field, 33% from three. Those are the four additions. Which one do you want to start with in terms of like one you're most excited for?
One I'm most excited for is me Brock Vice. I think it's going to be, I think he, based off of just the accolades that he had out of high school and the fact that he was going to Creighton, I think just shows you the talent level that he's capable of. And I think the expectations for him are going to be high for everyone. So I think he's my most exciting guy. I mean, having a, I think he's listed higher than 6'10". I could be wrong.
Maybe 6'10", 6'11".
Yeah. Someone probably rounded up somewhere, but I'm the most excited about him just because nothing against Mulai or Robert Allen, but this is a guy that recruited by Creighton and has all the accolades to be whatever. I obviously haven't seen any film on him because he didn't play. But I think I'm really excited for him because you get a guy like that with the intention to start, I'm assuming. And it shores up a position that we've talked about for at least without transferring for the next few years.
Yeah. I do like how young he is.
Yeah.
Right. Like to where he's a redshirt freshman to where you can get a few years out of him. I also like, unlike Robert Allen, and again, Robert Allen was very good last year. He's hefty, right? He's big. He's a big boy. 6'10", and I think 6'10", 250, something like that.
Yeah.
Like he's going to be a body. So I'm interested to see defensively how that looks because, you know, maybe he's not that quick, but I do think that is huge from the center perspective to have him and Mulai Sissoko. Now you have two guys that are really strong and can hold down the middle. We're going to talk about needs later on, but I wouldn't be surprised if they got like another center potentially.
Yeah,
just because like those are the only two really like guys that can play the five, and usually most teams carry three guys that can play the five, I think, mostly. So we'll see. Also, because Chris Morgan transferred out, and who else? Christian Moore transferred out as well. Those are two other. I didn't mention them in the departure, but okay. Brock Vice, also really cool name.
Before we move on, I did want to name a couple of his accolades. Finalist for Mr. Tennessee Basketball, or Tennessee Mr. Basketball, sorry.
Yeah.
And then the number three player in the state of Tennessee and the nation's number 32 best center prospect coming out of high school by 24/7 Sports.
Yeah, so, I think it was a highly, like, high three-star.
Yeah.
High three-star guy. Which, so
that's pretty exciting to me.
Yeah. Let's talk about Latrell Jussel. And I believe I'm saying his name right. I've covered him with SFA. Like I've watched SFA games because I do that Dave Campbell's podcast.
Yeah.
And Latrell Jussel, 6'1", graduate senior this upcoming season. I love the experience that he has. Like he was the lead guard for SFA the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, he was like a starting guard for SFA. So like he has experience on SFA teams that are pretty good in the WAC year over year. And if you look at his career stats, he shot over 37% from three every single season. Like I think 1 year he hit 40% and then this year he's back at 37%, but he's been like 37, 37, 40, 37 from three.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're getting a bona fide shooter. The 2-point percentage isn't bad either. He finished, I believe it's around like 44, 45%, something like that. So you're getting a scorer. We know how well, like, how guards play in this North Texas offense and how much freedom they have, especially late in clock and out of ball screens and stuff. So I'm interested to see him, you know, up close. I think scoring is his strength. I have defensively SFA has been good, but I haven't seen him enough. I need to watch him more as an individual defender to see really, you know, how he does, but still the experience is very, very exciting. Because this is the first time really that they'll have a point guard where they only have 1 year. Like,
yeah.
I mean, they go into it knowing they're going to have 1 year. I should say.
Did Kai only have 1 year?
Yeah, but I mean like point guard. Yeah. You're right though. Yes.
Yeah.
Kai Huntsberry. Yes.
Yeah.
But like Tyler, Javion,
Jason, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
We're all kind of not younger, but they all had probably 2 years, three. Well, Tyler had three, you know, Javion had two. Jason has two, something like that. So I think the experience is really big, especially when you're trying to assemble a team that is going to be like just all new pieces. So
yeah,
3 out of 4 of these guys being seniors is really, really good to me.
Kind of a thing I was looking at is obviously height. North Texas they were obviously weren't the biggest team, and we saw that a couple games last season, but you lose mainly Ruben and Aaron, who defensively helped this team out a lot. Do you think I can't say his name. Latrell Jostle, is that how you say his name?
Yeah,
basically. yeah. And like Jonathan Massey can kind of fill anything.
So
like Jonathan Massey defensively. And then obviously you had Jasper Floyd in there, but the 6'1", 6'3" guards is basically what I'm trying to get at. Is where do you think that is? Because even when Bugs was what, 6'4", 6'3"?
I think he's like 6'3".
Yeah. So defensively, what do you see from these three guys?
Yeah, Giselle, like I said, I think experience-wise, and I think playing for SFA, I think he's going to be fine defensively. Massey, I think, will be a good defender. I don't have his stats in front of me in terms of...
I'll get him up while you talk about him.
Looking at blocks or steals or whatnot. But Longwood was a tournament team last year. I think they made it as a 14, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. They made it as a 16. But regardless, like, this is a team that won the Big South, beat UNC Asheville, High Point. Like, they beat a bunch of top 200 teams and got up there. I'm looking at Jonathan Massey right now, ranked 238th in the country in steal percentage and 107th in the country in fouls drawn per game and free throw rate and stuff like that. So definitely a guy who can – like impose himself on a game. I'm not worried about Massey. I think Massey's going to be a really, really good piece for this team. My question is more so to your point of replacing the size. I don't want Massey at the four. Like, I don't think Massey can play the four. So he's not a Aaron Scott replacement to me. And if we start talking about like what they need, I believe they have three scholarships remaining. I think they got to go two bigs and probably another point guard.
I think you go one big in wings, honestly.
Well, like, they need a four. Okay. Is Rondell going to start the four?
No, but I think... No, okay. I guess... I think you need a
they
more
don't
physical
have a four
wing
on this roster.
But I think you should just get a more physical wing than getting a true four. So you have
wasn't
roster...
it a problem last year? Like, Aaron trying to... Aaron playing the four at times last year was kind of a struggle. I think there is maybe it is take just another forward slash. If you can find like a hybrid, maybe like a 6'9" guy that can play both.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's the answer. But I think ideally I would want at least a 6'9" guy that can play the four consistently. And then, I mean, I think they probably need another point guard. I think Alex Cotton's going to help this team this year. He's 6'5". Obviously, we already know Rondell probably is going to start this year, but he's about, what, 6'5", right?
Yeah, I think 6'5", yeah.
Matt Stone is 6'4". So, like, there's three right there. Freshman Tyron Mason, who I don't know if he can contribute, but he's 6'6". Like, I don't know if Terrence Dixon can contribute this year or not, but he's a forward more so. So maybe I've left him out. But, like, they have wings. They have 6'5 guys. But they don't have a 6'9 guy.
Yeah. Like, no, I know. I get what you mean.
Sissoko and Vice are their only guys that right now that are probably over like 6'6". So
yeah,
I think they need two bigs. That's where I've landed with this.
Two bigs and a guard for you, huh?
Two bigs and a guard. Because I'm fine on the wing.
What kind of guard are you looking for?
That's a good question. Probably a JUCO.
Well, I meant like style.
Play. I know, but like kind of a. I don't want to reach on a guy like Jalen Jackson. Like, I don't want like a Jalen Jackson type who can only like do one thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather get like a guy out of JUCO that has experience doing more. Mm-hmm. And maybe a guy who's like a sophomore, has like 2 years of eligibility or something, or 3 years where you can sit him for a year. Not sit him, but, you know, play behind Latrell and kind of go from there. So yeah, I would go two bigs and a guard. Because if you think about the three position, just rotate Massey and Walker for 40 minutes. That's a really strong three position.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And you can play them together too, but I'm just saying, like, you rotate those two there and then sprinkle in Cotton or Stone at the two behind Floyd. Like, I think that's a pretty strong rotation of guards. You just probably need a backup point guard and then some center help. some forward help, I should say. I think that's it on the basketball side. I guess since everyone was talking about it, we can touch on it real quickly. What were your thoughts on Jason Edwards to Vanderbilt, CJ Nolan to New Mexico, and Ruben to Michigan?
Man, I got to sneeze.
Let it out.
I just tried muting and everything.
So what crazy. I do, I like rub my nose like this, and it goes away usually.
Oh, that's a good idea, actually. I've never thought of that.
You're not going to try it right now, live on air?
It's gone away since you told me that, so we're good. All right, Jason Edwards to Vandy. Vandy is a not great SEC basketball school. Maybe they'll be better now that Jason's on there, but I mean, he's gonna get his shots there, and I think for him and his game, that's where he's gonna need it. You want me to just go through everybody, then you go through everybody, or are we gonna go one by one?
We can go one by one.
All right. So what do you think about Jason? You know the SEC a lot better than I do, obviously.
So obviously, like, this is two things. The first being, well, three things.
Oh.
The first being Vanderbilt last year was not good, 9-23. The 2 years before that, they were actually pretty solid, right? But historically in the SEC, Vanderbilt's been a doormat. Like, just they're not going to win more than like 5-6 games in the conference. Second thing is Jason Edwards needs to have the ball and needs to shoot the ball to be effective. We know that, we saw that, and that's how he wants to play. I think he will have those opportunities at Vanderbilt. So that makes sense to me. And North Texas, as much as it is like guards do your thing, you know, Cook, all this stuff, he had a higher usage percentage than Tyler, like significantly. And then I think he might have even had like, he was up there with Javion
yeah.
in terms of usage. But Javion had that usage, but was assisting off of it, right? Jason, way more than Jason was. Jason wasn't really... I think he had like 1.5 assists per game. So like, if you ask North Tech, like Ross Hodge and Grant McCaslin, it's like, we want our point guards to have the ball, but we don't want them to only be scoring. Like, their only asset is their score. I think he goes to Vanderbilt, and I think he's going to just be able to shoot the ball 20 times per game. So that's why, from my perspective, it makes sense. And then I do think, like, Jason Edwards, straight when he transferred, hired an NIL agent. Like, he hired an agent immediately going into the portal.
Yeah.
So he obviously made some money on this decision going to Vanderbilt. Like, Vanderbilt paid him well to go here.
Also, so, it's a great school. So, hey.
Yeah, and it's
it's Vandy.
So you're getting paid more. You're going to get to shoot 20 times per game without having to play defense like you had to at North Texas. A lot less stress there. Yes. You're going to lose a lot more games than you did at North Texas, but ultimately he's not going to play in the NBA. Like, he's going to go play overseas somewhere in a few years. Like, this is a guy who is a great scorer. He's going to score a lot of points in the SEC. He'll be on those like leaderboards when you look at like the top scorers in the SEC as top 10 scorers or something. And that's enough for him. And he's getting paid and he's going to a good school. So I just think it makes a lot of sense. I don't know why people act like it doesn't make sense just because it's a worse, which it is, it's a worse basketball program than North Texas at this moment. But yeah, that's not all that matters here.
All right, let's move on to Ruben. We'll do CJ last. Yeah. Ruben Jones to Michigan, massive. Hey, that would be my second team if I wasn't a Texas fan, because I was going to go to Michigan when I lived in Michigan.
Colin is from Michigan, everybody. For those who don't know,
I was going to go to Michigan. Michigan Twitter loves what Dusty May is doing. If he was able to get John L. Davis up there, that would be just an insane team.
Bro, we could have had Ruben and John L. Davis on the same team.
It would have been a little bit of a different Michigan team over the last couple of years. But no, Ruben going there, I think that, honestly, I don't know what I expected when he transferred, like where he'd go. But for him to go to Michigan, I'm really happy for him, because he's going to get a lot of eyes on him. He's playing in an incredible basketball conference. And if he's able to do what he does, he's got the body and the skill set to possibly make it to the NBA. So I mean, it's a great spot. I don't know. I can't really say much else. So I think this is best case scenario for him.
Yeah. Obviously we were never mad at Ruben for transferring because of what he accomplished at North Texas and what he did for the program. Like I said, when I had Tyler on, him and Zach Simmons are the two pillars of North Texas basketball to me.
Yeah.
Like, for the past 7-8 years. So I was excited for him to get an opportunity, and then he goes to Michigan with Dusty May, and I wish he could have played alongside John L. Davis, because that team, and then they added like an Alabama transfer. They've added dudes, and you're just like, man, that's a team.
Michigan's gonna be good.
So I'm very, very excited. I think he's gonna get the ball a lot. I think he's gonna be able to, especially now that John L. is on the team, like he's gonna be able to create a lot, defend high level. We get to see his defense on a bigger stage. Like, just stay healthy, ball out. Ruben is going to have a really, really fun year for Michigan, and I'm excited to watch that.
Now, here's the question. If he does go to the NBA, who claims him?
No, I'm claiming him. We're claiming him. I'm claiming him.
All right, last one. CJ Nolan to New Mexico. This one, I don't know, on the surface, felt weird. New Mexico is not an amazing – I mean, they have a lot of fans, but in terms of tier of programs – I'm not going to go like this is a huge jump for anybody. I guess my main thing is I'm going to talk through it with you real quick, and you can agree or disagree with me. Is you transfer to North Texas, you have the whole coming home thing. You're cool. You're here. You get the ball in your hands. Probably still going to happen next year. And then you go west to New Mexico. It just feels odd. I don't know. Obviously, he wanted to go there, but it just doesn't feel like it feels more like a lateral move than it does what do you call it? Vertical move, I guess.
I guess so. Sure.
Yeah.
Step up.
Yeah.
New Mexico this year had its best season since 2013. Last year was 66th in the KenPom, so respectable. But before that, they had about 8 years where they were outside the top 100 in a row in KenPom.
Yeah.
So New Mexico under Richard Pitino, obviously Rick's son, has turned it around a good amount. I think from a basketball perspective, I would make the argument to him, and I'm sure Ross did, that, you know, regardless of who we bring in, like around you, you're probably going to be one or 1A or maybe at worst 2 in this offense. Like, you're going to be the guy in this offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think going to New Mexico without knowing New Mexico's situation, maybe he could be the one over there, but I don't think he's going to step in and be the one immediately over there. I think Richard Pitino is a good enough recruiter to where he can get better players than CJ Nolan. So you're going to New Mexico, a team that will be good. I don't know how good they'll be this year, but a good team. But I think, like you said, it's kind of a stagnant move. And my question is, are you going to be getting the same amount of shots and opportunities that you would have at North Texas?
Yeah,
that's what we'll have to see. Maybe he is. Maybe he's going to be their number one guy in New Mexico. That would surprise me a little bit, because they've had some really dynamic guards come out of there that are just better than him. Jalen House, Jamal Mashburn, guys like that. But yeah, we'll have to see. I'm not sure exactly. It does feel more like a lateral move. And the one area where I think New Mexico is better than North Texas, kind of comfortably, is the home court. Like,
oh yeah, fan support.
The fan support.
Yeah, is definitely way better. So
that's the hard part as a North Texas fan, is being like, the Super Pit's not going to sound like what New Mexico has.
You know what's terrible too is New Mexico calls their stadium the Pit.
I know.
How's that feel, North Texas fans?
I know.
Hmm?
KenPom has them as the fourth best home court advantage in Division One basketball, New Mexico. Like, that's the only separator to me,
right,
between North Texas and New Mexico. So do with that what you will. Maybe he values that a lot. I don't know. But regardless, I don't have like ill will to CJ. That's not it's the most surprising one, but it's just like, it is what it is. Like, I think if Latrell Jussel was on the team, Latrell would have the ball a lot. I think they'd have a good combination together. But ultimately, I think North Texas, like, he's not an irreplaceable player. He's not Javion Hamlet. Here.
And then Aaron, I believe, is announcing his transfer school today between Memphis St. John's and I forgot the third one.
Who'd you say?
Memphis, St. John's, and
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Where would you want him to go?
Oklahoma, so he's in the SEC.
I forgot they're in the SEC.
That's what I want. I want him to come to the SEC, and I want to see him. Not because I don't know, again, not because I think he'll do bad or anything like that. I just want to see him. I just want him
play here. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I just like, I cover the SEC, so I want to see him
in
the SEC.
I think Oklahoma's probably the, in terms of pedigree. I mean, Memphis, obviously, in the past, but,
yeah,
you know, not really recently.
Well, St. John's has Rick Pitino as their coach, so.
No, I know, but, like, I feel like Oklahoma gets more eyes on it, too. You know,
and Oklahoma's closer to,
yeah,
obviously not only North Texas but Houston, where he's from, so that makes sense to me.
Man, wouldn't it be just a freaking shift going from Ross Hodge to Pitino, where at press conferences is literally telling him that he doesn't want to be alive after a game goes bad,
right? That'd be something. So yeah, Aaron, best of luck. Just don't go to Memphis. Which, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Memphis drops a stupid bag and pays him X amount of dollars.
Hate Memphis. Hate Memphis.
Don't go to Memphis. Just don't.
Is Memphis worse than SMU? Because the thing about SMU is that they had a lot of money, but they never did anything with it. Whereas Memphis can drop a bag, and you got Penny Hardaway. Like, you know what I mean?
How do I word this? SMU is like the, how do I word this? SMU was rich, but like they didn't boast it, like, to your face. They just like had, they it like felt rich when you went there, right?
I mean, I don't know. I remember going there my freshman year, and they were like actually talking about how poor we all were. As I was like walking through, like, for the SMU game, they're like, look at these UNT, these scum of the earth.
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I just feel like with Memphis, it's like, oh my gosh, we shouldn't be around this trash because we just have more money than them.
And I mean, it's like, that was definitely what SMU, us. I mean, SMU literally did that. They were like, oh, we don't need the money.
Okay, so but at least SMU's beating us. At least SMU was beating North Texas. Like, all right, you can talk shit if you're actually like better than us and beating us in these things. Memphis has all this money and is talking shit and is losing in all these sports and is not winning the American Conference.
Mm.
So like, what? Make up your mind. Like SMU, all right, you can go because you've beaten us up of 100 times.
So Memphis, who do you hate more?
SMU being out of the conference just really, it alleviated a lot of my hatred.
Here's my thing though. If SMU was in the conference, this is a huge tangent. If SMU was in the conference, at least I can look forward to a rivalry. Whereas with Memphis, there is no rivalry. I just have to look forward to wanting to win because I hate them.
Yes.
You know, whereas like SMU, it's just a rivalry. And I also hate them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's nothing to gain, is what I'm saying.
Okay. I feel you. All right, let's jump to football. We've been putting it off for too long.
Wow.
No transfer portal additions at this moment. I did talk to JD a little bit, and they have it up on their Patreon or Patreon, and again, they do a great job over there. But they're expecting some movement, some additions in the coming week or so. So be on the lookout over there. They do a great job reporting all that. But we can talk about the departures because that's interesting to people. And we can start a running back. Trey Bradford and Quallon Farrar leave the running back room. And it doesn't really make sense on the surface why Trey Bradford would leave. I will say, I think there are situations across college football and even at North Texas where they add these transfers for the spring window, especially. Mm-hmm. And that spring period is like a tryout almost. And if they're not going to contribute, it's almost like it's mutual, like parting ways. Like, all right, boom, you're not going to contribute. Because they come here to play.
Right, yeah,
and if you're not going to play, boom, neither side, boom, move on. Just go. Like that happens. That happens at every college. But I can't imagine a situation where Trey Bradford isn't in the two deep, especially with Ragsdale coming off the injury. And I can't imagine him not being better than Zach Evans. Like, even though I think Zach Evans is good, like, I just think he's until Ragsdale is back at 100%, Trey Bradford to me was like, should have been running back one. That's without being Patrick Cobb and seeing him every day in practice, but like, that's how it should have been.
Could it have been him being, you know, splitting reps with possibly three backs once Ragsdale gets healthy, and then also being a pass heavy offense? Do you think that could have been something that
the second part maybe? And we have two questions on this Let me see if I can find them. I know Sonoy asked one, a good one. Coach Wally Rigg asked about the running backs. He was excited about the quality and the depth we had. I know I Wonder the World also asked about the running backs at some point. But my point is, and to answer your question, is like, I don't think that first part is a concern because we've seen multiple running backs have good seasons.
For sure.
I mean, multiple running backs eclipse 500, 600 yards, like, in a season. I don't think he came to North Texas to be exclusively the running back one. Like, I don't know how many offenses in the country have exclusively a running back one if you're not a all-conference player at your school. So, yeah, it still surprises me. Now, we talk about the type of offense Eric Morris runs. I don't even think that's a concern because I think Trey Bradford, if you remember when I was talking about him, his days at LSU, like, he could catch passes.
Yeah.
First play of the season against Florida State last year, he caught a wheel route that went 60 yards.
Yeah.
So it's like he's not uncomfortable in those situations. So that's why I thought he was a great fit. I will say his career has been all over the place.
Tumultuous.
That's a good word, Colin. That's a good word. Trey Bradford, let me see if I can find the full rundown because it is it was like LSU to Oklahoma to LSU to didn't play a year to LSU to North Texas. I think off the top of my head, that's what I think the path
that
was.
Is insane. So what was he, a junior, freshman? I don't know. Or it's not no, freshman. I say freshman, senior, sorry. Junior or senior. That is crazy.
Junior. True freshman season. Redshirt freshman season, one game, sophomore season. Oh yeah, then so he went to Oklahoma but didn't play there, then transferred back in 2022 and didn't play that year, and then 2023 was his fourth year technically, and he played, I don't know how many games he played at LSU last year. Not many, like one or two. And then this year he would have been at North Texas. So fifth year overall, but third or fourth year playing.
Maybe he'll go back to LSU to follow the pattern.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I will say it's been a very, like you said, tumultuous path here. And Sonoy asked about why I think it didn't work out at North Texas and why it didn't work out at LSU, I guess, to give context to both. His situation happened, I think, as I was getting here, was when he had went to Oklahoma and then came back.
Mm.
From what I understand, he's not a like locker room cancer or anything like that. I think he's just indecisive as a person. And that's hard to do in college football, especially when you have the transfer portal era that allows you to be indecisive.
Yeah.
So I do think he is kind of fragile, and I'm not calling him soft, but like fragile in the sense that like if something goes wrong, he might hit the door.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I don't know. I don't know how he takes coaching because I've never been in those rooms, but like at LSU, it was always like, all right, is Trey Bradford available? Is he playing? Like what's happening here? And now at North Texas, he spends a spring there. Again, I presume as one of the most talented running backs on that team for sure, if not the most talented. And now he's back in the portal. Yeah. I don't think this is an indictment on North Texas, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So I said all that, and I just don't think that's an indictment on North Texas. Now, we talk about the running back room in general, and Quillon Farrar, out of high school, he was always kind of small, scab back type stuff. I always wondered if he was better as like a slot or something. But now your running back room is Zach Evans, the transfer from Minnesota, Akiko Ragsdale, who obviously has come back from injury, Kiefer Sibley, freshman, and Sean Wara, who I don't remember if Wara is a freshman or if he's just a regular sophomore. Regardless, that's your running back room.
Yep.
They're going to add another running back or two. Like, they're going to add another running back or two. And people ask why I'm not worried. It's because two things. Patrick Hobbs, year over year, has proven that he can put together a quality running back room. And two, in this offense, I just don't think it's the most important thing. In fact, I think it's arguably the least important position on this.
Yeah.
So, I would love to have Trey Bradford. I would love to have Iowa Day. But ultimately, if Zach Evans and Akiko Ragsdale can give you, and then if Kiefer Sibley or someone can step in and give you, you know, quality snaps, I think they're going to be fine. And they're going to go, they're going to go get another running back or two out of the portal or JUCO, wherever it is. So, like, I'm not worried that they lost Trey Bradford particularly.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
What else?
Move on. You want to just move right on to the QB?
Yeah, Reese Mooney.
Let's talk Reese about Mooney him. Had him in the pod. Sad.
The curse continues.
The curse continues. I think this one makes sense, I guess. I mean, when we had the pod with JD, it was kind of like, he kind of said that it was probably going to be, basically everyone was above Reese Mooney.
Yeah, he said Stone and Chandler Morris were above.
He said it was possibly also Cash. He said Cash was kind of fighting for that. So he came here to play, obviously, with him transferring. I don't think that was clearly going to happen. Yeah. So I'm not really worried about him leaving. Plus, we already all know Chandler Morris is going to probably be the guy anyways. So I don't, it's not really going to make that big of a difference anyways. The guy that is going to be the development quarterback is definitely going to be Cash McCollum going forward. So we got two solid quarterbacks moving forward.
Yep. I'm just, I'm ready for Stone Earl to start game one next year.
What would you do if he started?
I will give my undying support, Colin, because that's what we do. All right.
We did not do that last time.
We did not do that last time because we knew what we had on our bench. That's why. I think Chandler Morris is good, but it wouldn't stun me if Stone Earl started in the fall.
What if it's Casper Colum just starts, just out the gates, comes out as a freshman?
That'd be something.
That would be something.
The other departures, wide receiver Jordan Smart. I think he ever had about 500 yards last year, so it is a pretty significant blow there. I still think the receiver room is pretty solid. Landon Sides, Blair Conright, Damon Ward, and then Dalton Carnes and Jacalen Carter as two additions there. Jeremiah Aaron, DT Sheffield. They still have Ziklo McMillan in that room as well. So the receiver room is fine. Maybe they go add one more out of the portal looking for big game. I will say this is also the good thing about the spring period for mid-majors, honestly, even more so than the first portal window, is this second window is when a lot of those P5 backups enter the portal.
Yeah. This
more than in the winter period, like this is where after spring, they're like, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm really not
playing. And then the joy of it too, is that they can't leave after they come here.
Yeah, so get them here for at least a year. So it's like, this is a big period where I think North Texas has like 5, 6, 7 spots available on its roster. I think you can be really aggressive, and especially with Dallas kids, and maybe try to bring them home. Like you look at players from other schools, and I think that they could get some really solid players from big schools here. So
for sure.
We can wrap it up. O-lineman Justice Guillory enters the portal. That's one of those ones, like I said earlier, comes here for the spring period, transfers here, and then I guess isn't starting and transfers out. Then two freshmen, wide receiver Tim Madison and safety Corey Sweeney enter the portal as well. In terms of needs, like I said, I think they're definitely going to add running back. They're definitely going to add defensive lineman because I talked about with JD, everybody needs defensive lineman right now. They'll definitely add a couple. And then we'll see. Maybe a position like linebacker. I think they're fine at corner for the most part. And I think they're fine at safety. So it's like maybe linebacker, defensive
line. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised with how many needs I don't think they actually have. Like running back, like even if they didn't get a running back for whatever reason, like I'm not super worried about it. Linebacker and defensive line is always going to be a problem. But I'm glad we're not coming into this season going, oh, what about the secondary? Oh, what about are the receivers ready? You know, so I think in terms of where they're at, I think everyone's in a good spot right now.
Yeah. Let's see if there's any other questions I missed on Twitter over here. Eternal Star asked about opinions on NCAA fully allowing multiple time transfers and schools to pitch in money for NIL. I think it's inevitable. I think this is always where it was going to go, especially with the big dogs and the big programs kind of controlling and the big conferences controlling what was going on. They were already allowing players to move around freely. Yeah. Because until this whole situation becomes players as employees, they have no rights to stop them. You can't put a non-compete on somebody if they're not an employee. Like, if they're not employees, then they can do whatever they want, essentially.
Not only that, they just banned non-competes.
Yeah.
So, like, the government just, like, made it to where you can't have non-competes.
Something like that. I didn't read into it.
Yeah, I don't know if that applies to everything, but if that applies, then they're just not going to be a non-compete. Let me see.
Yeah,
look at that real quick.
And again, the NCAA was always like, well, they're not athletes, so we're not going to pay them through the schools. And so it's like, all right, well, if they're not athletes or if they're not employees being paid through the school, then why are we restricting them from going from school to school, basically?
Yeah. FTC just voted to ban non-compete agreements. So I'm assuming that it's a blanket non-compete. So it's not.
Yeah. So again, until this is collectively bargained and you get a, like in the NBA, like
Players Association,
like in anything. Yes. Yeah. To where it is structured and you have contracts and you have negotiations and you have buyouts or whatever else you need, like until that happens, yeah, you can't stop players from transferring. They're going to go wherever they want. And in terms of schools being able to pitch in money for NIL, is it really that different? I mean
it's the same thing.
I mean,
the schools are probably getting the money there somehow anyways, so
yeah, so it's one way or the other. However the money flows, the money is flowing to players now regardless. So yeah, it's not a huge surprise to me as well. All right, that's it. There we go. 40 minutes. Hit on all the transfers, Transfer Portal Podcast. We'll be back next week. We'll try maybe look at getting some guests on. I was definitely going to reach out to the new basketball players and see if they can come on the podcast. So be on the lookout for that soon. Thank you all for joining us. For Colin Mitchell's Blank White Hat, I'm Matthew Bruni. We will talk to y'all again next week.